nationwide. We bring you latest current issues, discussions and information. Nationwide on Radio Miraya.
Hello and welcome to Nationwide. My name is Annie Martin. We are coming to you live from Juba this Monday evening. Today we are going to be looking at the very latest update on the implementation of the Revitalized Peace Agreement of 2018, including the roadmap has agreed upon by the parties to the agreement in August this year here in Juba, where they agreed to extend the interim period by 2 more years. And I'm joined in the studio here by the Honorable Minister of Higher Education, Science and Technology, and also is one of the leaders of the South Sudan Opposition Alliance, the SOAM, and we shall be discussing more about the latest update on this roadmap implementation process. Good evening, Honorable, and thank you so much for joining us, Honorable Gabriel Changson Chang.
Thank you. Good evening.
Yes, our lines will be open to you later on, where you can call on 091-206-2079 or 091-206-2950. Those are all our lines. You can call and begin asking your question to the Honorable Minister here. And right away, let's begin. In August this year here in Freedom Hall, the parties to the agreement, including yourself, signed an extension of what is known as the famous roadmap, extending the interim period that is expected to conclude next year by 2 more years. So people have been waiting to see, where are we with the implementation of this roadmap, including the entire agreement?
Well, thank you for the opportunity. The roadmap was agreed upon by all the signatories to the R-axis, and they discuss the possibilities of extension or go for elections. But I think, given the odds that were in front of the parties, they decided to go for a lesser evil. Mm-hmm. And the lesser evil is to extend, because going to the end of the transitional period, which is going for democratic, peaceful, credible elections, would not be possible at that time. And therefore, why? Because there are a number of benchmarks that were not fully implemented. One is the unification of forces, and this is very crucial. But as we speak, the first phase, which is the 51,000+ forces, are almost all of them are graduated and awaiting deployment. And this is a welcoming statement. Then after deployment, the second batch would go to the training centers, which is almost about the same number, 50,000 plus. And they'll go for a number of months before they are graduated. So that is that process is moving on, but with a lot of challenges. Among the challenges is that if we were to deploy our forces now, the ones graduated, many of them do not have guns. And to deploy soldiers of this nature, they need to be
equipped.
Armed.
Yeah.
They need to be equipped. And South Sudan is under armed embargo, and it's not allowed to also purchase guns to fulfill that that obligation. Secondly, also the civil population across the whole country is well equipped, is are well armed, and for the unified forces, to have full control, then they must be their armaments must be over and above
that of the civilians.
Mm-hmm. So that is a challenge, which means it leads us to why don't we think of disarming the civil population? Disarming the civil population is also has its own shortcomings. Among them would be first you have to convince the civil population that peace has come and it is here to stay, and even if you give up your arms, your lives and property will not be endangered.
Right.
So that is something that has to be, they have to be convinced.
Okay.
Giving up also those armaments, those arms, would need a trade-off. They'll not just hand them over to the government and say bye-bye.
Okay. Yes, like you are trying to shed more lights on the achievement in Chapter 2, though we are already behind schedule, because the first one of Chapter 2, that is the security arrangement, was supposed to have done on the 30th of last month. That's just like a few days ago, though this has not happened. Besides the security arrangement, what else is being implemented as per the implementation matrix of the roadmap?
Well, again, that is one benchmark which is very important. You have the constitution-making process. That process has kicked off, and it is it is working, which means there are a lot of processes to be followed for South Sudan permanent constitution to be processed and done. So the committees are working. For me, I'm not one of the
committee member
of the committee members, and then also there is this transitional committee which is led by the security advisor and some members. That is the body in charge of the implementation of the roadmaps, dealing with all the various government units that are charged with the implementation process. But what we know is that this process is ongoing, but it has a lot of things to be done and a lot of also challenges, because to draw up a constitution of for South Sudan, it means that it will be a very inclusive process involving all the political parties, civil societies, women group, youth, traditional leaders, you name them. And that is a process, and which means it needs also resources. Resources, and it has to be planned out well. So, but the process has kicked off, because there are institutions that are responsible for that, and they are working on the processes and the legal framework that will eventually lead to this one. This, what do we do by constitution? In the agreement, we are all agreed that federalism will be the basis for our governance.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, the details of that federal system will be defined by this process.
Right.
Whether we go for presidential, like the U.S. or South African, the French presidential system, which is mixed, and also the the parliamentary system like the British and the Indians and the rest.
Okay.
So those ones will be defined. A lot of details will come out later on. Until we reach to the process of, to the end result of going for a referendum to confirm that this is a constitution that has been discussed inclusively, agreed upon, and now all South Sudanese are pending their decision on on the outcome of this document through a referendum.
And again, according to the implementation matrix of the roadmap, the restructuring and the reconstitution of various commissions at the national level should have been done by August, but till now, none of them have been reconstituted. What is hindering this process?
Yes, I think from the very beginning, I mean in August, we sat at the high-level committee in charge of distribution of these positions. We ascertained the number, and I think it was 67.
67 commissions. The
commissions and peristatals. And then when we came to distributing them, we only distributed about 17 of them. Another 50.
Seven.
50. We distributed 17, mm-hmm. and each party has received what is due to it in detail.
The five parties.
Okay. But unfortunately, the 50, we could not agree, and we raised it to the presidency. Now we are awaiting the decision of the presidency whether the remaining 50 will be distributed all among the parties or some of them will be distributed. So we expect some move next week.
Okay, if the parties, including SOA, can agree to distribute 17, why did they fail to share the 50s? What was the reason? Or are there more commissions which are superior? Everybody wants certain commissions, or what's the problem?
I think our difference was on the fact that some peristatals bodies are more or less related to the work of several ministries.
Okay.
And there is this opinion that those that are directly under the ministries should remain under the ministries without being distributed. So that is the main thing. But the rest, many of us are also saying that, well, since they are appointed by the president by decree, then it means that they are no longer under those ministries. So that discussion is on, and we expect the presidency to feed us back as soon as possible. But some of our members are also working on how to reduce the number from 50 to a reasonable number that will be distributed. And as soon as we are given the go-ahead, we will sit, we will distribute it as usual, and then there are the appointments.
How is the calculation being done mathematically? Do you go percentages, or you just agree and say, okay, so take this commission of parastatal and then IO, FD and the rest?
Yeah, well, first and foremost, we resort to percentages, okay? Out of that number, like the 17, I think IG got 9, then IO got 5, mm-hmm. SOA 2, and OPP 1, by percentages.
What about FD?
FD is no.
Okay.
They don't surface there. Okay. So that is the first thing to do, to know that how many.
Mm-hmm. Why are they being left out? Yet they are seeking the agreement.
I think I don't need. In the agreement, they were not. they are also complaining. Mm-hmm. And their complaints is is being
taken care of.
Being addressed or whatever. That is the first phase. We give mm-hmm. the ratios, and then we are sure of that. Now then, how do we know that this commission goes to this and that? What we do, we have devised a way of doing it. We list all the commissions, we list all the parties, and then we tick. We give an open ticking. Which commission do you want to have? You take it. You will find that many, and then we will have three or four issues to address. we first go to those commissions that were ticked without being contested.
Mm-hmm.
Then automatically they go to those parties. Those contested by two parties, then we make the two parties sit and agree to make give and take.
Mm-hmm. Maybe if you can remind our listeners, can you remember some of those contested commissions, maybe, if you don't mind?
Well, it's not confined to any of them.
Mm-hmm.
Almost all of them, you will find the four parties mm-hmm. contesting on one commission. Two parties contesting on one commission,
yeah.
Three contesting on that one. But we devise a way of settling that. We do it by elimination, and then by another party giving up that seat and to take up another one until everything is fully distributed, and that is a good way.
Mm-hmm.
We do it. Yes.
How will you describe the process? Is it amicably, or are there some kind of a lot of pull here and there?
Well,
argument?
As human beings, there will be pulling of ropes, but eventually we have no way.
Yeah.
But to finalize it, and all the commissions, though they have some importance here and there, we also balance those things up. If you take a very important commission here, then you have to give up also
on
the other
commission.
One for your for the other party. So it was done amicably, and that was how we also distributed the gubernatorial seats and state ministers.
Right. Now, what is the status of the Political Parties Act? Where are we with the process right now, as well as the reconstitution of the Political Party Council? Because these are very important aspects here.
Well, Political Parties Act, as I think at the moment it may be at the end, at Parliament, or it might have passed the national legislature to be assented to by His Excellency the President.
Mm-hmm.
That will be the end of the process. I don't have the complete update on it, but it is moving very well. Once it is assented to and becomes law, then the Political Parties Council will be reconstituted as per the agreement.
Mm-hmm.
The the membership is defined by the agreement.
Right.
And so once it is also reconstituted and appointments are made, then the Political Parties Council is by law given 1 month to prepare itself and then to invite political parties for registration. So all these political parties, we hope they will go for registration when they are called upon by the Political Parties Council, the reconstituted one.
Okay. And according to the implementation matrix also of the roadmap, the parties are supposed to set up a robust infrastructure development that will be used as a base for a competent National Election Commission that will conduct a free, fair, and credible election. From where you sit as one of the leaders of SOA, where are we with that process?
Come again, please.
Yes, according to the roadmap, the parties, which includes SOA, they were supposed to come up with a robust infrastructure development that will be used as a base for setting up a competent National Election Commission that will conduct a free, credible election at the end of the interim period, as you extended. Where are we with the process?
Well, you are talking of two processes.
Yeah.
One is once the they go parallel.
Yeah.
And that is establishment of National Election Commission. This is very crucial. That body is yet to be established, and then not only to establish it, but also to capacitate it by training the election personnel, by equipping the election offices, both in the, at the national
and the state,
states and also counties, so that by the time we go for election, they will be competent to conduct that free, fair, transparent and peaceful election. So that is a process. It has to be done. That is one part. So you have to make sure that those who are in the personnel of the electoral process are well equipped. The second part, and which is about the political parties, yes, we are in a multi-party democracy. According to the agreement, there are five parties, five main parties, but within them there are so many smaller parties, like SAWA is composed of about nine parties.
Mm-hmm.
OPP, it has. Gender, it has. National Alliance, they have. So, according to the rumors that are on air, you are talking about 60 plus political parties,
mm-hmm,
that will go for election. Now, in the Political Parties Act, there is funding from the government,
mm-hmm,
for these political parties. But unfortunately, the details of that funding were not defined, were not spelled out in the annual budget of 2022-23, and there is no provision. Maybe when there will be a supplementary budget, then there will be a budget for the political parties. That budget is intended to build the capacity of the political parties.
Mm-hmm.
It is not only intended to go for campaign, but their capacity must be built so that they know what is multi-party democracy, what are the pros and cons, what are the obligations. Okay, otherwise if we go raw, then many of us or many of the political parties will not accept the outcome of the verdict of the people. And once there are election deniers, then that system will be very much questioned. And so now the political parties, as I said before, if the political council is formed, then they will call upon the political parties to register their parties, and to register means you have already organized yourselves, and you are ready to do politics. Now, as we speak, there are only two parties which we used to call them during the negotiations as the two giants,
mm-hmm,
SPLM, IG, SPLM, IO. They are the ones now active in terms of preparation for I'm sure for registration and for elections after 2 years,
mm-hmm,
maybe. But with the rest, I think we will also follow suit in our small ways.
Okay.
Honorable,
let me take you back to what you said earlier, that phase one of the security arrangement is almost done, according to the Joint Defense Board and JTSC, that's the Joint Technical Security Committee. They are saying that they are only left with two training centers, that is in Unity State, Kaljak and MAM. And this is supposed to happen maybe this month or before Christmas, and which shall be done on the phase one. Now, all this is being done and efforts are being put to this chapter two. But now we have another challenge. There is a lot of subnational violence happening across the country, and an example is in Upper Nile State, where the citizens of Upper Nile State, they don't know the dividend of this peace we are talking about. People are being displaced. According to Mirai News, 1,000 people were displaced, and now they have made their own way to the protection of civilian society in Malakal. So to what extent is this impacting on the implementation of the revitalized peace agreement?
Well, that is a good question. And you see, we don't want to play blame game, okay? Things went wrong from the very beginning when we were establishing our state governments. What is happening in Upper Nile, or in Melakal for that matter, is an issue of contested land between the Dinka in Upper Nile and the Chuluk. They are contesting the the land in Melakal. And if we were to study this issue properly, then from the very beginning you cannot put head on two contesting parties to administer the state themselves. We were expecting the third party or the fourth party to be appointed as the governor.
And in this scenario, who is the third or fourth party?
Well, you have the Nuers, who are the majority, even in Upper Nile. They have the majority. Okay? If the position went to IO, IO should have brought a Nuer and not a Chuluk.
So you think that should be the solution?
Well, it has an effect. Okay? It has an effect because if I'm a Chuluk and I claim land in Melakal and I'm the governor, I will be accused of being biased to my tribe. Okay? So that was why we thought it wise that
But now, what about what's happening now? I understand also people are being displaced in Fashoda.
Well, that is again, let me
Kilo,
come.
Ashara.
That is one factor, the appointment. The second factor is the Kitgwang issue. Kitgwang issue were the two generals that could not go along with IO, and they decided to stay out and to establish Kitgwang
and they signed an agreement with the government.
Okay, from the beginning. Okay, then now that one became another factor that is destabilizing, which means it is IO versus IO. Then eventually there was an agreement I don't know the details of that agreement.
The Khartoum agreement in January this year.
The Khartoum agreement that the Kitgwang group should join the peace process fully. And there was an agreement. Okay. So we assumed that they would be moving together, but eventually the two generals
split.
Departed ways, and as a result it has brought this rampant insecurity, especially in the Chuluk land. Okay, so again the solution must come from the national government.
So, in your opinion, as a leader who comes from Upper Nile state, what is the way forward as we are implementing the agreement? Citizens who are supposed to enjoy, like I said, enjoy the dividend of the peace process, they are being displaced. Their people are being killed. We just heard from the president that the king have to be airlifted to Juba for his safety. And this is not fair for the people of Melakal because they are also part and parcel of this country. They must feel that there is peace being implemented. There's no need for them to be moving from one place to another POC under protection of somebody else. What is the way forward?
Well, The way forward is not an easy issue.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot even prescribe it to you here,
yeah,
because who am I?
There is a call, Honorable, there is a call. We understand during the graduation of the necessary unified forces in Malakal, I'm sure maybe you went or you were not there. We understand that there was a call for all the leaders of Upper Nile region or Upper Nile state to have a conference or a dialogue. When I heard that, one thing that came to my mind is this is not the first time for this call to happen. There was a similar event here in Juba. So what is unique about this call this time?
Well,
do you buy the idea?
I think what you have to do is that when there are national issues or problems, we talk of homegrown solutions to homegrown problems. Okay? Now, what it means is that for us to move forward and to move forward as one, as a block, then we have to define in very critical terms what is the real problem. Okay? You cannot solve any problem without defining it, isolating it, and then prescribe alternative solutions. So even if we go for a conference and that conference does not address the underlying problem, then it will be just a talk show. It will be a talk show, and after a while people will go back to square one, and that is not the way of solving problems. I think solving problems, the national government, the state government, and their politicians, their leaders, should sit down and define what is the problem. And if it is found that this is the problem, how do we resolve it?
Okay, you sit together every Friday during the regular Council of Ministers, and I'm sure there are agendas and there is any other business. Has it ever been raised during the cabinet meeting as one of the main agenda or any other business? Or have we also tried as a leader from Upper Nile to raise it during the cabinet meeting as maybe main topic or any other business?
You see, I think we have a lot of organs,
yeah,
that are tasked with resolving problems, starting from the presidency.
Down.
Okay. In cabinet meetings, most of it is about the memos, the policies that are presented by various ministries to be discussed and to be passed into law or as policies. You have the security sector, the security organs, okay? Those are the ones that will identify it. Where are the areas, flash areas, how do we go about these things? So it is not just an open, open thing. If it is brought, I don't want to go into details of what we have been discussing. If it is brought, we sit and try to address it as adequate as possible. But again, the issue of Upper Nile is a critical issue, and it cannot be allowed to linger on. It is not only Upper Nile also.
Mm-hmm.
There are flash points in various states.
Okay.
Again, it goes back to what we discussed earlier. The rampant armaments of our civilian population is one of the factors bringing this insecurity.
All right. If you have just joined us right now, you are listening to Nationwide. My name is Sani Martin. We are coming to you live from Juba. And with me here in the studio, I have Honorable Gabriel Changson Chang, who is one of the leaders of South Sudan Opposition Alliance, the SOAM, and also the National Minister of Higher Education, Science and Technology. We are looking at the implementation of the roadmap, including the entire agreement, and you have heard from him. Our lines are open. You can call on 0912062079 or 0912062950. Those are all our lines. You can call and be part of our discussion. Hello.
Hello.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening to your name.
Yes, Marianne from, well, I'm really appreciate you, my friend, Sunny Matters.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question there to the Minister of Higher Education.
Yes.
You know, this agreement now is confused as citizens of this country, because when we read the content of agreement, is okay, but the politicians, especially those who are signing the agreement, they are trying to do the agreement, because when they implement it, citizens will benefit, but for them, they think that they will lose something. So my question to the guys, now as the party is looking to be given a chance so that it can provide people with the services, but now I want to talk direct to the minister, because he's there.
Mm-hmm.
Now the people are suffering under his administration. Like now, abroad, the students are crying. No money, no whatever.
Okay.
So I want to ask him, what is his intention, really?
Okay.
Is he trying to serve the people of South Sudan, or he just need to be a minister and he's just enjoying his power?
Because thank you so much. Hello, Redimire.
Hello.
Yes, your name?
Good evening. This is Neil Charles from Bentiu POC.
Okay, Neil Charles, go ahead.
Thank you for the guest in the studio, Mr. Changson, the leader of SOA. He has been so attached and was very quiet without coming to the studio. I will take you along with some question and some recommendation, because we, the South Sudanese, we've been watching our leadership, the movement, seeing the agreement that was started some years back. When I tried to look at the context of this agreement, starting from the signing of this peace agreement until there was a joining of Unified Force that were also in the field for more than 2 years.
Okay.
And then you look at things are not going the way that people are expected. And that's why sometimes we do blame our government.
So
if I talk of the government...
So what is the question?
My question is, if people are talking of gradation of Unified Force, and sometimes there's an excuse of, you may find that other people from the states are not being graduated, are we really in the right track of promoting the peace, or we need a peace in South Sudan?
Okay. Thank you so much for your question there in Bentiu. Hello, Redimira. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, your name?
Sana Madan.
Yes.
I'm Peter Marina Manakan.
Okay, Peter Marhabek.
Now, I will have you on the honorable this video.
Mm-hmm.
Swal Vitaeta and Swal Basit, I think, Ikun Makasar. Another goal, you know, and the level of the Mushak and Kainti are the Afanai. Ugal solution, the town, Mabek, the Yogulu, Aban. The King Rayana, Malu, and the forces of Gadin Shakuladin, who is an anamataki in the United Guam. The Kinokuma Maluma Dakalan, who Kuma Yau Master and Watan and Gadin, Major Alien, and Motan Taban, the Yed Kwada, and Wada Malu, what is Alukum, my Dakal, who told the Barak in the Gibo Sudan.
Okay. Okay. Shukran Kal, sir. Peter Mina Malakal. Yes, Honorable, let's begin with the last question. Why is it proving very difficult for the government to intervene and contain what's going on in Malakal, in Upper Nile? Maybe by sending forces so that at least the situation can be calmed down. And the question from Niall in Bentiu POC, he's asking whether we are in the right track in terms of implementing this agreement. And then Marielle from WOW was saying that the citizens are a little bit confused. They don't know. The content of the agreement is very good if you read, but the politicians are not willing to implementing this agreement. Why is it proving very difficult for you who signed the agreement to implement it in spirit and letter?
Thank you. Let me start with the last one.
Yeah. Peter.
The intervention of the national government into the crisis that is going on in Upper Nile. Well, you see, this agreement has parties to it and has provisions. Okay, we describe what is Kidgwang. Okay, and then those of Malakal, they know it very well. For the government to intervene would be in a form of deployment of forces. Okay, the graduated forces, if they are deployed, then they can arrest the situation, the insecurity situation. But if you don't arm them, okay, and everybody around them is armed, even if the government sends forces with their sticks, it will not be effective. So let us look at the bigger picture. Let us see it in totality. It is not an isolated
But as he keeps seeing it in totality, the people are the one paying the price. That's the concern. The longer you take, the more pain you inflict on the people by not acting very quickly.
Yes, for instance, if I may, you have imposed, the international community has imposed embargo on the government of South Sudan, and that was imposed when we were at war. Now we are in peace, and we want this peace to be consolidated. Give us arms, or allowed us to buy arms, so that we equipped our unified forces. That is the only way. You will not do it in another way. Mm-hmm. Okay. That is one part. The second part is what I described before, that we sit and define the problem critically, because agreements are based on compromises, give and take. If you don't do that, then you go nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So that is the challenge that is facing the government.
Okay.
Okay? If you come to that of unity, well, I think one or two centers are remaining to be graduated. It is an issue of logistical things. Once it is done, they will be graduated as their colleagues. Mm-hmm. Upper Nile was done, a week ago.
Yeah.
Okay, so that should not be the contest. Mm-hmm. But the government is resolved to make sure that phase one goes out and deployed. So it is coming.
Okay.
Let them not...
Mariel, why is it proving very difficult for the parties, the agreement to implement, has the sign in spirit and letter?
If I were to tell Mariel,
mm-hmm,
that what is an agreement? Agreement, whether between you and your wife, whether between you and your children, whether between two warring parties, is based on compromises. Okay? And not only compromises, when agreements are drawn, that's why we say it is one thing to sign an agreement, and it is another thing to implement the agreement. Why implementation is difficult? Because when you agree, you make compromises on one sentence with different wordings. Now when it comes to implementation, you interpret it your way. I do it my way. We differ. If we don't go for more compromises, give and take, then we will be stuck. That is why agreements are difficult to implement.
Okay.
You
can pick,
the other one, I thought he was talking about the students are suffering.
Yeah, that's part of as to why you cannot implement the agreement. Maybe as we are concluding,
I want to mention,
let me put this together, you can answer, and then we conclude. And as he says, the students are suffering. The lecturers also in some of the public universities are on a strike demanding for their pay. Maybe you can tell us where are we? That's on a different note now. Where are we with resolving this problem?
Well, for the students, I think I am now over 2 years in the ministry. What I have done is to effect reforms as per Chapter 4 of the R-axis.
Mm-hmm.
And we have made a lot of it. Previously, not all the states, not even the administrative area, they don't go for scholarships because they were centered
in Juba here.
In Juba here. That one, we removed it. And now we use two principles. If the number of scholarships are many, we divide them by counties. We have 80 counties, 79 plus Abia. So all the counties, they get their scholarships, whatever size it is, which is fair. If the number is less, we do it by states. And then within the states, they do this one. So we have not even compromised the quality and merits for competition. Only that we have transferred the competition to counties. We have also transformed, like Egypt, it used to be partial.
Mm.
We have now made it fully funded. Ethiopia is fully funded. Morocco is fully funded. Now we are struggling with Khartoum to get it fully funded because we know that our students,
So these ideas of a scholarship were suspended is not true?
By who?
Okay. Now, because of the interest of time...
That is not true.
Okay. Now, the lecturers were...
Well, for the teaching staff, I was very blunt. I was very direct with them when I met them about 2 weeks ago. You see, what they are doing is not the right thing. Their salaries were increased in 2019 by a cabinet decision. This time I tried to let them get the 100% that was given to all civil servants. It was difficult. So we resorted to developing new salary structure. And that new salary structure, we have done it together with the universities. It is now in the process of being passed. Tomorrow, if not because of the SPLM meeting, if we get a quorum, we have it is tabled at the cluster. From the cluster, it will go to the cabinet. It is the cabinet to decide. It is not Minister of Higher Education. We don't have money. Money is released after it is appropriated by the cabinet and then by the national, this one.
Okay.
So they are impatient for nothing.
Mm. So what is your remark to them? Because some of them might be listening and they said, if you are not paid, we shall continue with our industrious action.
Yeah, but whom do they punish? It is these innocent students.
Mm-hmm.
But in Bahr el Ghazal University, I just spoke with the Vice Chancellor, Deputy Vice Chancellor for Academic Affairs. They have quietened down the situation. They have agreed with the students that their exams, which were supposed to start today, were pushed to before the end of December by their agreement. And so if we pass it tomorrow and then next week it goes to the cabinet, what is it? We told them this is a process, it cannot be done at a go. Otherwise, they will be even sabotaging their own efforts.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Honorable Gabriel Changson Chang. And that's what we have time for this evening. We hope to talk to you some other time. Thank you very much for coming.
My pleasure.
And with that, we have come to the end of the first hour of Nationwide. Join my colleague David Lucan for the second hour after the news.